here's Barry Took with the radio game, in which he invites all the family to test their memories of 60 years of radio listening.
Welcome to the radio game.
Guess what? Guess why? Guess the who and how? All the things we'll ask now. Guess which? Guess what? Guess the where and when? Why and wherefore and how? Get your pencil and your paper out. You're the winner if you know about the what, the where, the why and when, which and wherefore and how.
And that little number, which some of you will remember, should give you a clue as to what you have to do. Because the players in this game, which celebrates 60 glorious years of sound broadcasting, are to be you, your families and friends. So do what the ladies said. Get your pencils and your paper out and join in. And remember, it's better if you play as a family or group, because we don't expect even the most devoted of you to know everything about 60 years of the wireless. Well, for the next 45 minutes or so, I'll be playing you extracts from famous programmes, past and present, and asking you questions about them. There'll be 60 altogether. Write your answers clearly on a single sheet of paper, send them in to us, I'll give you the address later, and, with a bit of luck, you might even win a prize. £60 worth of audio equipment for the first correct entry opened, and BBC LPs for the 10 runners-up. Oh, by the way, the rules of the game and some memory joggers to help you complete your entry are all on page 16 of this week's Radio Times. But on with the show. You've heard the first extract. It was from Ronnie Waldman's Puzzle Corner, a long-running quiz which appeared in two programmes. The first question is, name one of them. Either will do. Now, that was just a starter to get you in the mood. Our first round of questions has a family theme.
The time in Britain is 12 noon. In Germany, it's 1 p.m., but at home and away, once again, it's time for two-way family favourites.
Good old family favourites. Could we ever forget it? But who was the presenter you just heard? And now for a favourite family.
Oh, do come in, Dr. Mitchell. You are a bit early, but...
I'm usually late, so I thought I'd be on the safe side.
Mother and I are just having a cup of tea. Do sit down.
Yes, the Archers. Still going strong, but here's a moment from Budget Day some years ago.
How's the new bank rate of 4% going to affect that overdraft, Dan?
I don't know. Better see the bank manager in the morning about that.
Well, milk, meat and flour are all going up in price. I wonder if the farmers are going to get anything out of that increase.
Yeah, I don't know. It won't, I'm afraid. What it will do is make the public realise just what it costs to grow and produce this stuff.
Yeah, that's true enough.
Never mind. Income tax allowances are up and family allowances have gone from 5 bob to 8 bob, so Jack and Peggy will be pleased about that.
Yeah. And old Walter hasn't got to pay any more for his pipe or his pint, so he'll be pleased about that.
No, I'm not going to ask you when the bank rate went up to a scandalous 4%. It was actually 1952. Your Archer's question is this. We've heard that Jack and Peggy are going to be pleased about the family allowances. They had 3 children. Names, please. And here's another famous radio family.
Ron, you can't take your dad on our honeymoon. Well, you know him and his remarks. Oh, Ron.
Oh, now, don't cry, beloved. No. Look, we needn't all stay at the same hotel. We'll book a double room at one hotel and a single room at another.
Well, that might be possible.
Of course, that. Then Dad and I could meet you on the beach after break.
No prizes for knowing that that was the Glums, but who played Ron and Eth? And now for the royal family and the first ever Christmas message.
Through one of the marvels of modern science, I am enabled this Christmas Day to speak to all my peoples throughout the empire. I take it as a good omen that wireless should have reached its present perfection at a time when the empire has been linked in closer union.
And now another royal message.
We know, every one of us, that in the end, all will be well. For God will care for us and give us victory and peace. And when peace comes, remember, it will be for us, the children of today, to make the world of tomorrow a better and happier place. My sister is by my side, and we are both going to say good night to you. Come on, Margaret.
Good night, children.
Good night, and good luck to you all.
Now, what was the relationship between the first royal broadcast you heard there and the second two? Well, that, by the way, was question 7. Here's question 8.
Hello, children everywhere.
The avuncular voice of children's hour, Derek McCulloch, better known as Uncle Mac. The signature tune of Toy Town, one of the best-loved children's programs ever. Versatile Uncle Mac played one of the characters, but which one? Here's a snippet to jog your memory.
It's disgraceful, keeping us waiting like this. He, the mayor of Toy Town, he ought to set a good example.
He'll be here any minute now, sir.
He ought to be ashamed of himself. And he won't have my seat when he does come. I was here first. Yeah.
And I must ask you not to speak disrespectful like Mr. Gerser. For it'll be my painful duty to take your name and address.
Mr. Driver, Mr. Coachman, the mayor can't go today. He's detained.
Now, remember the question? What part did Uncle Mac play in Toy Town? Now, do you remember Life of Bliss?
Who's going to finish up my nice apple pie?
No more for me.
More me. I've had a wonderful lunch.
Shall I give it to Psyche?
Well, dogs shouldn't have sweet things, really. Still, just this once.
You think she'll like it?
Oh, good gracious, yes. She'll eat anything.
That's not very complimentary to my cookie. Psyche. I've got something for you. There.
Psyche the dog getting a titbit. But who played Psyche? Harry Hemsley was famous for his child impersonations. Here he is in a toy shop, playing both shopkeeper and customers.
How about a lucky dip?
No, thank you. I had a bath this morning.
But this is a different sort of dip. You put your hand in a tub and bring out a present wrapped up in paper.
No, I want to see what I'm buying. How much is that airplane with the black stripes?
5 shillings. It's been reduced.
How big was it before it was reduced?
Harry Hemsley also had an imaginary radio family. Can you remember the children's names? Well, we've had 10 questions. Let's recap. 1. Of which radio show was Puzzle Corner a part? 2. Who was the presenter of Family Favourites that you heard there? 3. What was the name of Mrs. Dale's mother? 4. How did Dr. Dale address her? 5. In The Archers, what were the names of Jack and Peggy's children? 6. Which actors played Ron and Eth in The Glums? 7. The three royal broadcasters you heard were related. How? 8. What part did Uncle Mac play in Toy Town? 9. Who played Psyche the dog in Life of Bliss? 10. What were the names of Harry Hemsley's stage children? The signature tune of Music Hall, the show that had millions of listeners glued to their wireless sets every Saturday night at 8 o'clock for years. But what is the name of that tune? Can you remember that? And here's a moment from Hancock's Half Hour.
Hancock's Control Tower. Something strange is happening. There's a peculiar knocking sound on the windscreen. Seems to be coming from outside the plane. I'm slowing down to 1,800 miles an hour. We'll slide cockpit open to see what's wrong.
Good evening.
Who was the chap knocking on the window of Hancock's aeroplane? Between Music Hall and Hancock came the war and Itmar, with Tommy Handley and his faithful charperson, Mrs. Mopp.
I've brought this for you, sir.
Oh, isn't that nice? What is it?
It's the Bosun's Blancmange, sir.
Bosun's Blancmange? Looks more like a dumpling with a duffel coat on.
GTSN.
NLYSLDTH.
What's that, sir?
Never let your sea legs dangle down the hatch.
Now, ITMAR stood for It's That Man Again. But what did TTFN stand for? Second ITMAR question, what was the name of the actress who played Mrs. Mopp? Another great wartime variety show was Garrison Theatre. Listen.
Hey, Mr. Chappell, you remember I sang that song about a bunger up a rat hole?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to... Oh, I did, didn't I?
Yes, you did, yes.
Now, well, I'm going to tell you about a few more occupations, eh?
Good,
I don't want. Righto, thank you, Arthur. Funny song. You've heard about my family that's got some funny jobs. I mean jobs that must be done right on the spot. Well, take my Uncle Oswald. Now, he does a bit of gardening. I'll tell you just what kind of job he's got. He's a bloke what shaves off gooseberries with a penknife. He's a gooseberry shaver off. See what I mean? He holds them in his left hand and he shaves them with his right hand. Until like grapes, they're nice and smooth and clean. But now and then his hand is rather shaky. Then he bricks them and the juice goes in his eye. Still, all the time there's gooseberries, they'll be shaved off at gooseberries. And he don't know why he does it, nor do I.
Now, what was the name of the Cockney soldier who sang the song about those odd occupations? So, to recap, question 11, what was the title of the signature tune of Music Hall? 12, who knocked on the window of Hancock's aeroplane? 13, what does TTFN stand for? 14, who played Mrs. Mopp? 15, who sang about shaving gooseberries in Garrison Theatre? A slightly more serious note now, but we're still at war, when there was a series called Postscript, which went out after the 9 o'clock news.
My dear Mr. Schickelgruber, it is much better to use the name which was yours until you changed it to Hitler long before the last war. In fact, Mr. Schickelgruber, it might be a wise move on your part to change back. No one can really be angry at anyone named Schickelgruber. And so many, many people are really angry at the name Hitler.
Now, whose voice was that? And who is this, talking about a little paddle steamer called Gracie Fields, which went to Dunkirk but didn't come back?
I tell you, we were proud of the Gracie Fields, for she was the glittering queen of our local line, and instead of taking an hour over her voyage, used to do it, churning like mad in 45 minutes. And now, never again will we board her at Cowes and go down into her dining saloon for a fine breakfast of bacon and eggs. She has paddled and churned away forever. But now, look, this little steamer, like all her brave and battered sisters, is immortal. She'll go sailing proudly down the years in the epic of Dunkirk. And our great-grandchildren, when they learn how we began this war by snatching glory out of defeat, and then swept on to victory, may also learn how the little holiday steamers made an excursion to hell and came back glorious.
A more recent conflict now.
I'm in the water. We're going ashore with paratroopers heavily laden with missiles and guns. It's a very quiet night. A starlit night. And now we're ashore. A British parachute force is back on the Falklands.
Who was that member of the BBC's reporting team in the Falklands? Now, this man was doing the same sort of job 38 years earlier. Who is he?
The din of the battle grows louder. There are wrecked vehicles overturned in the ditches. An odd tank here and there burnt out. A military policeman steps out from the hedge and stops you. Not wise to go any further. There's a couple of jerry tanks down in that wood on the left. You've arrived. This is the front.
And now for something more cheerful. Victory. VE Day in 1945.
Now Mr. Churchill stands on the balcony of the Ministry of Health. He's wearing his boiler suit, the famous boiler suit that he's made so wonderful. And he had the audacity, shall I say, to put on his head his famous black hat. Nobody can say that it goes with a boiler suit, but you heard what a cheer it raised from the crowd. He stands now in the floodlights, the band playing for He's a Jolly Good Fellow, and he's giving the victory sign for all his might from the flooded balcony.
Well, who was that reporting Churchill's moment of triumph? And how are you getting on? Better than this chap, I hope.
What English international team played on the continent and there wasn't a single solitary Englishman playing?
Was it a Scots team?
No, there wasn't a single British man playing. Not one single English man playing.
Yes. No, English. It was a Scots international team.
He quite right. He says, what English international team? And there wasn't a single English man playing.
Well, I think I know what you mean.
What do you mean?
It must have been a women's football team.
How did you know? Well done.
Well, that was double or quits. Now, who was the question master having such a hard time? And so, to sport of another kind.
In, out. One, out. Two, out. Three, out. Four, out.
No, it's not Arthur Scargill. So who is shouting in, out, and so on that recording? And another question, this, by the way, is question 23. What on earth is he describing? Question 24 is about football. It comes from the days when the Radio Times printed a handy chart of the pitch numbered square 1, square 2, square 3, square 4, and so on, so that you could tell where play was taking place.
There goes the whistle, and now we're off. The ball has been sent over from the centre to Jones, who's banged it down the field to McLean.
Square 6.
A clever tackle by Brown, and McLean is beaten. From Brown, the ball has gone to Kelly.
5-4.
Then from Kelly over to Smith on the left wing, but the pass is too hard, and the ball's gone over the line, about 30 yards from the Blackburn goal.
Still in square 4.
Blackburn are throwing in. The throw-in's being taken by Healers.
4-3.
He has thrown it to Thornwell, who dashes forward. He slips the ball to the middle. Ross Kemp seizes on it. A short dash through. Here's a great chance. He's
back
shot.
In 4 again.
Mercer, the Huddersfield goalkeeper, has caught the ball, but Ross Kemp rushes on. Ross Kemp has bundled Mercer, and the ball is the net. It's a goal to Blackburn Rovers in well under a minute. Jove, what a sensational start.
Well, who was the commentator? Yes, I know there were two, but I don't want the man who kept on saying square four and all that. The principal commentator. Who was he? And now, name this excitable fellow commentating on the 1981 Derby.
Shergar's going for the guns. He's gone four, five, six, seven, eight lengths clear. Shotgun swerves under pressure. Two furlongs out. The Derby is the procession. Shergar is 10 lengths clear. Scintillating air gets into second place. Church parade and shotgun. Glint of gold come next. There's only one horse in it. You need a telescope to see the rest. They have a furlong to go. And Shergar is galloping them into the ground. 15 lengths at least. Shergar, clear of his field. He's climbed this mountain. He has eased up. Shergar wins the Derby.
Well, who was that? And who are these? And it's not, by the way, an early stereo recording of John Arlott.
And with that, we greet Light Programme listeners with the news that at lunch, England had roast beef, Yorkshire pudding and potatoes. Well, now, since I spoke to you last, no runs have been scored and no further wickets have fallen. But this is probably due to the fact that there's been no play going on. Well, now, it's Ray Limwell coming up the ball to Dennis Compton. And Compton takes a mighty swipe at that one, misses the ball completely, but succeeds in covering the wicketkeeper from head to foot in hair cream.
Right. Who were they? As we're in the area of parody, let's stay there for this.
Well, what's your problem, Dennis?
Well, for a couple of years, I've been having a very happy and fulfilling relationship with the TUC.
Mm-hmm.
But now, my partner is threatening to break up the whole affair.
And I expect you ask your partner to exercise restraint.
Well, yes, I do, but...
Has it occurred to you, Dennis, that you may be going through the Mayo pay pause?
Have you consulted a doctor, Dennis?
Yes, and I was given massive injections of IMF funds.
That didn't help.
Well, for a while, but now my partner is expecting me to take part in... Oh, no, it's too horrible.
Take part in what, Dennis?
In free collective bargaining.
That was Weekending sending up one of the BBC's advice programmes, but which one? You know, the BBC's always been pretty free with advice. Well, this is typical. It's not a parody. It's for real.
How are you today? How's your tongue? Is it smooth and red, or knobby and beige with an overcoat of a muddy hue? And how's the stomach? Is it firm and steady, or somewhat warm, or a little wobbly and a trifle windy?
Now, who is that? And who are the singers here?
Come to terms with worms, the cheapest form of protein you will find. Each morning on your lawn, several hundred more are born. You simply set the worm traps near the cast they leave behind. Food research affirms demand for this new staple food will spread. And much to the dismay of the RSPCA, farms now exist where battery worms are bred. Good husbandry of worms brings big returns, so we must come to terms with worms. Earthworms, change your attitude. Earthworms, eat them grilled or stewed. Earthworms, they're a natural food. We really have to learn to go to work on a worm, because it's worthwhile changing to earthworms. It's worthwhile changing to worms.
And I wonder, what would this gentleman think of that?
Good afternoon. I suppose one of the most difficult jobs to explain over the wireless is the pruning of fruit trees. I've had a good many tries, but I doubt whether I've ever made much of a success of it. But in response to many requests, I'm going to have another try.
Well, that was a much-loved gardening pundit, but who was he? I see that we're at the halfway mark. Let me recap on the last 15 questions. Question 16, who wrote a letter to Hitler? 17, who talked about the boats at Dunkirk? 18, who reported from the Falklands? 19, who went to the front? 20, who described Churchill on VE Day? 21, who was the question master on Double or Quits? 22, who said in, out? 23, why? 24, who was the pre-war football commentator? 25, who was the post-war racing commentator? 26, who played John Arlott? And we want both of them. 27, what programme was Weekending sending up? 28, who was the radio doctor? 29, what group sang about worms? And 30, who was the gardening pundit? As we go into the second half of the contest, we're still with gardening. Who is this?
Good afternoon. I always think May is rather a difficult month in the vegetable garden. Days are hot, nights cold, and late frosts often appear just when everything looks like plain sailing.
Well, we still have gardening experts and doctors too, but nowadays we don't have anything like this.
Here is Mr. F. Hope Jones, our time expert.
Stand by. Are you ready? The last 5 seconds of the hour and the last one will be the exact hour. Pip, 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 pip.
The human clock of the 20s. Would that he were here now.
The time is just coming up to, oh Lord, I'm as bad as Jack on this, 20, roughly, 39.
Now, he's as bad as Jack, he says. The question is, who's Jack? Now, parlez-vous français?
Je suis convaincu que nous vivons un moment historique comparable à celui d'il y a 20 ans. Car il est certain que les décisions que nous prendrons tous dans les semaines à venir seront déterminantes pour l'avenir politique de l'Europe.
Un moment historique, certainement. But who is fracturing the French language there? And who is tasting the wine here?
Oh, no, no, of course, it's an Australian champagne, isn't it? Clicquot Wallaby, 1963. 1963 and 64. They have the summer in the winter, you know. Wait a minute. It has a slight suggestion of strawberries, so it's probably, in fact, an amusing little Japanese hock. No. A Japanese Burgundy, then, a Nuisan Nagasaki? No. No, of course not. It's a pint of bitter, isn't it? Half a bitter? Bitter lemon. Little bitter lemon. Lemon tea. Lemon squash. Milk. Water. Coffee?
No, Herbie, I'm sorry. It is, in fact, a plate of steak and chips.
Well, that was from I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again, a favourite phrase of newsreaders. But I doubt if this one ever needed it.
Here is the midnight news.
And this is who reading it?
Up to 10 o'clock, 175 German aircraft had been destroyed in today's raids over this country. Today was the most costly for the German Air Force for nearly a month.
Well, everybody ought to recognize this voice, but what's her name?
President Reagan says America is facing a crime epidemic and Congress must act. And in the US Open tennis, John McEnroe is out in straight sets and a bad temper.
That is the end of the news. Here is the weather.
There will be sporadic rain over the whole country with thunderstorms in places, but there will be bright intervals in most districts. The weather will continue warm except on the northeast coast where there will be local fog. There's also news today of a long-lost friend, the Large Depression. It's turned up again between Ireland and the Azores, where it's reported at the moment to be almost stationary.
Well, that was the first weather forecast after the war. But who's reading it? The goons, of course, have weathered well.
Winds like are variable.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Winds like are variable. I'm practicing, you know.
Don't tell me you're applying for the post of announcer.
Oh, yeah. And I'll get it, too. You see. I'm wearing a Cambridge tie.
You? You were at Cambridge?
Yeah.
What were you doing there?
Buying a tie.
Who wants to be a weatherman? That's to say, what was the name of the character? Next question. Who played him? The straight man, by the way, was Wallace Greenslade. Now, here's the unmistakable voice of Richard Baker.
I'd like to ask you, if I may, to end our programme today by giving us a little early one morning once again at the piano, with perhaps in the style of Mozart.
Could with a great pleasure, yes.
You could.
A little fine. Sonatina.
Now, Jimmy, I wonder if you would mind moving over to our specially installed pavement in the other corner of the studio and seeing what you can do to the sound of Mozart with a little tap dancing. Do you mind doing it?
Come on, Jimmy. Right.
And we'll play out with Solium and Lord Mustard.
Well, that was a moment from Richard Baker's radio chat show. The question is, what's its title? Well, that was question 40. Let me recap on the last 10 questions. Question 31, which gardening pundit was it? Question 32, who always seemed to get the time wrong? 33, who was the Englishman almost speaking French? 34, who was the wine taster? 35, who was the gentleman newsreader? 36, who was the lady newsreader? 37, who read the 1945 weather forecast? 38, which goon show character wanted to? 39, which goon played him? And 40, what's the title of Richard Baker's Radio 4 chat show? Now here comes question 41, but first a little tape clue.
The time is just now 11:50. This is David Dunhill, and this is the end of the home service for today and for all days. In one sense, I suppose, we're like a bride on the eve of her wedding. We go on being the same person, we hope, but we'll never again have the same name. Tomorrow at 6:35 a.m, we become Radio 4, and we expect to live happily ever afterwards. So, goodbye, home service. Two of the best words in the British language.
Well, in which year did the home service die? And the corporation open its doors to this sort of thing?
Music at morning time, music at night time, and music whenever you feel it's the right time to switch on and groove to the sounds that will let you know that you are happy, that you own a radio, and you can tune to the station that gives you a plentiful portion of powerful pop and is ready to serve you the music non-stop. So wait for the news that will happily say, Radio 1 is at last on the way. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1!
The very first Radio 1 jingle. Who sang it? Of course, they were DJs before Radio 1 was born. Housewives' Choice. It had many presenters, but this one was a journalist and a popular broadcaster on Woman's Hour as well.
Now, I happen to have a partiality for herrings and kippers. My mother's a great theory that fish feed your brain. But you're certainly lucky these days, if it's true. And I was delighted when I went out to breakfast last Thursday morning and found kippers on the sideboard. My hostess let me in herself at the front door, and she was wearing a green woolen dress. A sort of semi-utility model, I think you'd call it. Anyway, it's a very nice colour, and she looked awfully real in it somehow.
Well, who was that? And who is this even earlier DJ?
Well, I'd like to be able to bring this bunch of records to you. And then I'd see from the look on your face whether each one pleased you or bored you. Songs, for instance, that we've heard so often, sung by our friends or by professional artists or played by bands or broadcast, do they still come to your mind with the fragrance of memory?
And how's this for fragrance?
If I say I love you, I want you to know it's not just because there's moonlight, although moonlight becomes you so.
The singer is a disc jockey of many parts. Who is he?
Journey into space.
This chap has spun the odd record in his time, too.
The BBC presents Jet Morgan in Operation Luna.
I've got two questions here. What is the name of the person introducing Journey into Space? And who played Jet Morgan? Still out there somewhere are two hitchhikers gadding about the galaxy on a bird.
Take us down to the ground, you stupid bird.
No. I'm just going to circle around here for a while, then sooner or later you'll have to let go and continue your journey. I'm sorry, but there it is.
Hold on, I'm going to crawl out along its neck.
You're going to what?
Crawl along its neck with my towel.
Are you crazy? Miles up on a mad bird, you're going to drive behind the ears?
You watch.
Watch? I'm going to pray, man. Know any good religions?
You watch. Here I go.
How am I doing?
What?
How far have I got?
How do I know, man? I've got my eyes closed. Don't you know how far you've got?
No. I've got my eyes closed.
Terrific.
Well, who are those trepid hitchhikers? Names of both characters, please. But now, as they say, for something completely different. Three radio Hamlets. We've assembled a famous soliloquy so that you hear all three in one speech.
To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles and by opposing end them.
To die. To sleep. No more. And by a sleep to say we end the heartache and the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished. To die, to sleep. To sleep, perchance to dream.
Aye, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil must give us pause. There's the respect that makes calamity of so long life.
Well, who are those three Hamlets? Let's recap. Question 41 was, when did the Home Service die? 42, who sang the first Radio 1 jingle? 43, which presenter of Housewives' Choice gave that knee-deep in muesli little talk? Question 44, who was the early DJ? 45, who was the singing DJ? 46, who introduced Journey into Space? 47, who played Jet Morgan? 48, who were the two galactic hitchhikers? And questions 49, 50 and 51, who were our three Hamlets? And let me tell you that the last one was better known as a Hollywood Romeo. Well, now we're on the last lap, and we've come to Under Milk Wood.
To begin at the beginning. It is spring, moonless night in the small town, starless and Bible black, the cobble streets silent and the hunched quarters and rabbit's wood limping invisible down to the slow black, crow black fishing boat bobbing sea. The houses are blind as moles, though moles see fine tonight in the snouting velvet dingles, or blind as Captain Cat there in the muffled middle by the pump and the town clock, the shops in mourning, the welfare hall in widow's weeds, and all the people of the lulled and dumbfound town are sleeping now.
Who was the narrator on that recording? And now an extract from the ultimate in radio drama, The Revenge, a play composed entirely of sounds, with no dialogue at all, written by a well-known comedy actor. Who? What he should have done, of course, was send for this chap.
Dick Barton, special agent.
Looks like checkmate, Barton, don't it? You got a grenade and I got a grenade.
If you take another step back, Dufresne, you'll be over the edge and joining your friend Weimar in Kingdom Come.
Don't make me laugh.
Captain Barton, is everything okay?
Yes, no, I'll be with you.
Yeah, but I won't. No hard feelings, Barton. Keep seeing
you. Dufresne, you idiot! Come back, you fool! Blazes!
Yes, the original Dick Barton. Who played him? And now it's Christmas Eve, 1938. Stop! Over to our interviewer, who is standing on the corner of a busy railway station.
Now, we'll try another gentleman, a tall gentleman who's standing next to me. How are you going to spend your Christmas?
Working.
Working?
Yes.
Oh, that's a bad thing for a start, yes, isn't it? Yes. You're going to be on duty all the time?
Yes. Oh,
well,
yes.
What is your duty?
I happen to be the police inspector.
You're a police inspector?
Yes, yes.
Well, I ought to warn you that anything you say will be taken down, altered, and used in evidence against you.
And I ought to warn you that you want to get busy and get this crowd out of the road, because we've got some work to do.
Well, who was the In Town Tonight interviewer who was standing on the corner? Whoever he was, he had better luck than this chap in Checkpoint.
Leave the microphone alone, Mr. Bilby. Leave it alone. Now, let's have some answers on behalf of a number of people who haven't actually got large quantities of money. You guaranteed to repay them, didn't you? What's a guarantee mean, Mr. Bilby?
Well, that was the presenter of Checkpoint having his microphone disconnected forcibly. But who is he? And after all that, time for a little light relief, Viennese style. Well, that singer made her name early in the comedy series Educating Archie and rose to great heights. But who was she? More echoes of Vienna now. Here's a moment from High Gang.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your favorite reporter, Pete Keyhole, giving you all the latest inside information about the personalities on the High Gang program. Personality number one, Bibi Daniels. The only reason why people listen to musical numbers on this program comes from an old and very aristocratic family. She has so much blue blood in her that every time she cuts herself, she fills her fountain pen.
Well, who was the Viennese member of the High Gang gang? The Viennese connection ends with this.
Could you look after yourself on a desert island?
Could I look after myself on a desert island?
Yes. Could you build a hut? Are you any good at carpentry?
Build a hut?
Yes.
You must be out of your mind. I can't even build a box, anything. Can you build a hut?
No.
Then why do you expect me to build a hut?
Now the question is, who was the Viennese desert island castaway? Our last extract carries a message. Have a go, and I hope you will. And the 60th and last question is, who played the piano in Have a Go? I'll recap on those last 9 questions. Question 52 asked, who narrated Under Milk Wood? 53, who wrote the sound effects play The Revenge? 54, who was the original Dick Barton? 55, who, that pre-war Christmas, was standing on the corner? 56, who presents Checkpoint? 57, who sang the Viennese waltz in Educating Archie? 58, who was the Viennese comic in High Gang? 59, who was the Viennese castaway on Desert Island Discs? And finally, question 60, who played the piano in Have a Go? If you're having a go at the radio game, the address to send your entry to is the Radio Game, BBC, London W1A, 4WW. I'll repeat that. The Radio Game, BBC, London W1A, 4WW. And your entry should arrive by Wednesday, the 13th of October, at the latest. I'll be back with the answers and the names of the prize winners on the first Sunday in November. So, as Henry Hall would have said, here's to the next time. Until then, this is Barry Took saying goodbye.
The Radio Game was presented by Barry Took. The questions were compiled by Dennis Gifford, and the program was produced by Sharon Banoff and Sally Thompson.